From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, June 10th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at redzonewireless.com.
Maine lawmakers have passed a student loan bill of rights aiming to protect borrowers. The Senate unanimously enacted the legislation today. Democratic Governor Janet Mills has 10 days to act on the bill or let it go into law without her signature. Such legislation had failed in the last legislative session under a Republican administration. The bill creates a student loan ombudsman with responsibilities that include reviewing and possibly resolving complaints from borrowers. The ombudsman would also compile and analyze borrower data and help borrowers understand rights and responsibilities. Maine's bill requires servicers who do business in Maine to obtain a license and undergo an investigation. The bill automatically licenses student loan servicers under contract with the U.S. Department of Education. Maine apartment renters would be protected from sexual harassment by landlords under a new law that's now headed to Governor Mills' desk. The Maine legislature has voted in support of legislation by Democratic Senator Louis Lucchini of Ellsworth that's designed to protect tenants from such harassment. Lucchini says low-income tenants are especially vulnerable to sexual harassment, and his proposal makes clear that any landlord who harasses is breaking the law. The Maine Senate Majority Office says there aren't any protections under Maine law for tenants who've been harassed by a landlord or a landlord's agent. There's also no defense against an eviction in retaliation for reporting harassment. And both public and private shipyards are facing a loss of skilled workers as many are retiring and there's a shortage of training programs. Maine Congressman Jared Golden has added language to the National Defense Authorization Bill to try to address that problem.
Public and private shipyards across the country are seeking to hire and increase shipbuilding workforce numbers. We are staring at a bit of a cliff in terms of pending retirements.
Golden's amendment requires the Navy to come up with a strategy to make sure the shipyards have the skilled workers they need to build and repair Navy ships. He says both Bath Iron Works and the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard will face a growing problem in coming years. Golden says similar language is being pushed by Maine Senator Angus King in the Senate version of the Defense Authorization Bill. Looking at the weather tonight, becoming overcast with rain in the west and lows in the mid-50s to the low 60s. Tomorrow, rain with some isolated thunder, ending statewide by dusk with highs in the low 60s to mid-70s north to south. Wednesday, partly cloudy in the north, otherwise sunny, with highs in the low 70s to low 80s north to south. The highly publicized trial of the man accused of killing Somerset County Corporal Eugene Cole began this morning in Cumberland County Superior Court. John Williams led local and national law enforcement on a nearly four-day manhunt last April after Cole was found dead outside a home in Norridge Walk where he'd been shot to death. As Patty White reports, the question for jurors is not whether Williams killed Cole, but if he did so with intent.
For Williams to be convicted of murder, jurors must decide beyond a reasonable doubt that he knowingly and intentionally killed Corporal Cole. In opening statements, Assistant Attorney General Leanne Zania laid the groundwork for that case as she described what transpired when Cole and Williams encountered each other in the early morning hours of April 25th last year. Williams was wanted on drug charges. Cole had been looking for him. While on patrol that night, Cole happened to spot Williams getting dropped off at a house in Norridge Walk, so he pulled his sheriff's truck over and got out to arrest him.
As Corporal Cole reached for the defendant to arrest him, the defendant jerked away and caught Deputy Cole off guard. Corporal Cole lost his footing, and he slipped to the ground.
It was then that Williams brandished a handgun, Zania says, and shot Cole in the neck at such close range that lead from the bullet was later found on the collar of the corporal's shirt. Williams then fled in Cole's marked truck and robbed a Cumberland Farms before heading into some woods on foot, armed with two guns. Those details, such as shooting someone at close range in an area of the body likely to cause death, argues Zania, show clear intent.
That the killing of Corporal Cole was the result of an accident, then you wouldn't arm yourself with a high-powered weapon, such as a submachine gun and a 9mm handgun, with enough ammunition to load both and flee into the woods.
Williams evaded capture for nearly 4 days by hiding in a small cabin as more than 200 local and national members of law enforcement searched for him. When he was found, he was gaunt, bearded, barefoot, and barely clothed. His appearance in court Monday was a stark contrast to the day of his arrest. He was clean-shaven and wearing a dark blazer and glasses. In his opening statements, defense attorney Vern Parity noted the difference in his client.
Who you will see and hear is a completely different person than existed on April 25th.
Parity told jurors that he doesn't dispute most of the facts of the case, but he said Williams was using cocaine, heroin, and other drugs virtually nonstop when he killed Cole. And his level of intoxication, Parity says, interfered with his ability to form intent.
Mr. Williams could make decisions. It's not our defense that he wasn't functioning. It's our defense that Mr. Williams did not intend to cause the death of Corporal Cole.
His intention, Parity argues, was to avoid going to jail on drug charges. Parity is seeking a lesser charge of manslaughter in the case. Assistant Attorney General Zania, meanwhile, reminded jurors several times to apply, quote, common sense and reason when evaluating the intent of Williams' actions last April. His trial could last up to 2 weeks. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Maine's largest medical marijuana dispensary and a New York-based investment firm say they are prepared to sue the state if there aren't changes to a group of proposed rules designed to make sure businesses in the adult-use market are owned by Maine residents. The prospect of a legal challenge could slow down efforts to start commercial sales and efforts by state officials to enact long-delayed regulations. Steve Missler has more.
Organizers of the 2016 ballot initiative that legalized the commercial sale of adult-use marijuana often said the voter-approved law was designed to give Mainers a leg up in the nascent industry. So they included a provision that required all marijuana establishments have a majority ownership by Maine residents. But now, attempts to enforce that provision in rules created by the Office of Marijuana Policy are being challenged by Wellness Connection of Maine, which owns 4 of the state's 8 medical marijuana dispensaries.
These rules have gone well beyond the statute and threaten our ability to continue to serve Maine people and to continue to raise the bar regarding public welfare and safety.
Patricia Rossi is the CEO of Wellness Connection, and she told lawmakers on the legislature's Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee during a public hearing held Monday that her company can live with the residency requirement in the voter-approved law. But Rossi and Wellness's corporate attorney, Sarah Maupin, say the draft rules designed to enforce that requirement could disrupt the company's ability to garner investment from outside of Maine.
Wellness needs the ability to contract beyond Maine borders. These rules threaten to embargo, and even more than the underlying statute, they threaten these interstate relationships, and that's the primary reason that our support is conditioned on further changes to the rules.
Those regulations include provisions that make it difficult for out-of-state companies to subvert the residency requirement by creating complex ownership structures that give the appearance of local ownership while out-of-state entities actually pull the strings, a technique often referred to as a corporate veil. Eric Gunderson, director of the Maine Office of Marijuana Policy, has said the residency provisions were drafted because other states that legalized adult-use marijuana saw big companies push out small local businesses. But Dan Walker, a lobbyist representing Wellness Connection, says the agency's rules could violate the Commerce Clause in the U.S. Constitution.
My client or one of our partners will be forced to sue the state on the grounds that the residency requirement in the statute is unconstitutional.
One of Wellness's partners is Acreage Holdings, a New York investment firm that claims cannabis investments in several states that have either legalized medical or adult-use marijuana. The publicly traded firm last year made headlines when former U.S. House Speaker John Boehner and Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld joined its advisory board, and more recently for acquiring Canada-based Canopy Growth in a deal that could create the world's largest marijuana company. In public comments submitted to the Marijuana Policy Office on the draft rules, Acreage Holdings threatened to sue the state if it doesn't change the residency requirements. The policy office has since proposed modifying the regulations, but it's unclear if state lawmakers will adopt looser residency requirements. Independent Representative Kent Ackley of Monmouth says the adult-use rules should benefit Maine entrepreneurs while not stifling out-of-state investment.
My hope would be that we can find a solution to that particular concern that would meet both goals.
But striking that balance will be difficult. There is already fear among some Maine-based cannabis companies that they'll get shoved out of the adult-use market by big operators. And with the legislature scheduled to adjourn by the middle of the month, lawmakers don't have a lot of time for finesse if they want to approve the rules that could allow commercial sales as early as next spring. The legislature's Veteran and Legal Affairs Committee will continue to work on the proposed rules over the next few days. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock, where we'll hear from a panel of veterinarians about taking care of your pets this summer. I'm Nora Flaherty.